Well, you got quiet really quick, so I guess we shall start. One of our brethren talked to me last Wednesday about the difference between the songs nowadays and the songs in the 50s. And what was the song, brother? What did it say? You know, it's just time to move on, right? What's pretty much the message?
Got along with us before I met you, gonna get along without you now. Is that the
one? Yes. That was pretty much it. So you just move on. You don't do drugs to get over people, you know, and that's the difference between the songs back then that had a positive message and the songs nowadays, which pretty much they don't censor anything anymore. So forget about the subliminal messages. They just straight up and tell you all the bad things that they want to tell you, and we need to avoid those things. So as a follow-up, pretty much, Psalm 1, it's interesting that Brother Jenkins said that we, based on last week's lesson, which we kind of went halfway through the Psalm, chapter 1, he said that I only have 149 Psalms and a half. Right? It's actually, if you count the other Psalm, 151 Psalm, there is a 151 Psalm, not in all Bibles though, then I will have 150 and a half Psalms to go. But anyway, we'll discuss a little bit about the 151st Psalm, which is pretty much a song attributed to David and his experience when he fought Goliath. But we'll touch that on that last lessons that I promise you, where we're going to take a look at the book of Psalms as an overview and give you some tips to help you study and appreciate this book of songs and prayers more. So, traits of a genuine Christian. If you follow Psalm chapter 1, it will pretty much give you the basics that you need to do in life in order for you to be a successful Christian. And when you do so, then you are successful and you become a genuine Christian. A genuine Christian is one who is real, is not one that is fake. And what I mean by fake, it's not the type of Christian that struggles, stumbles, falls, gets up, and does his best, her best, to try to continue and stay in the way. I'm not talking about that Christians. We're not perfect. Anybody perfect here? Not me. Anyway, nobody's perfect here. We all try to serve God, and we stumble from time to time, but it is important that we follow that quote from, I guess, Batman Begins, why do we fall? So we can learn to pick ourselves up. Spiritually speaking, the principle applies, and we can make it a spiritual principle, and it is important for us to understand that. What I mean by a fake Christian, I guess the word would be unfaithful, but we're going to use fake, is the one that stumbles, falls, but doesn't care anymore, and is content with wearing a mask, pretty much. He just wears a mask. So what kind of Christian are you? What kind of Christian are you? You need to ask that question to yourself, and you and God obviously know the answer, and you need to make sure that you fall into the category of genuine Christian. Not fake, but genuine Christian. And Psalm chapter 26, the practical lessons that we will learn from there, will help us pretty much understand the traits of a genuine Christian. And again, I'm talking about Christians who actually follow the basic principles of chapter 1. And many commentators believe that David, in chapter 26, was thinking of Psalm chapter 1. And there are some parallel words that we will see there. And let me grab one of these Bibles, pretty much, to in case somebody needs the page number. Psalm chapter 26, if we go there real quick, we can read the psalm and then draw the lessons from there, practical lessons that will help us know if we are truly genuine Christians. Vindicate me, O Lord. And the page is 492. 492. Psalm 26. Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. There's a parallel word with Psalm 1. Does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. And he says, I have also trusted in the Lord. I shall not slip. Examine me, O Lord, and test me, or prove me. Try my mind and my heart, for your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth. I have not sat with idolatrous mortals, nor will I go in with hypocrites. There's another parallel there. Does not sit in the seat of the scornful. And pretty much he says, I have hated the assembly of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash my hands in innocence, so I will go about your altar, O Lord, that I may proclaim with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all your wondrous works. Lord, I have loved the habitation of your house and the place where your glory dwells. Do not gather my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloodthirsty men, in whose hands is a sinister scheme and whose right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be merciful to me. My foot stands in an even place. In the congregations, I will bless the Lord. Interesting psalm that gives us traits of a genuine Christian. So what are those traits of a genuine Christian? And this pretty much serves as a test for you. If you are truly a genuine Christian, then you will possess these traits. If you don't possess all of them, obviously, as everybody in life, we need to work on these things so we can make sure that we are genuine and that we are well-pleasing unto God. First trait, a genuine Christian has faith in God. What does it mean to have faith in God? What does it mean to have faith in God?
To trust Him.
To trust Him. Wow, you're reading my notes. It means we trust Him. Obviously, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean upon your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your steps. In other words, when we let God guide our steps, it means we are truly walking by faith and not by sight. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. It means that we follow His word. We are seen through the eyes of the Bible. You know, the things that God tells us to do in the Bible, we do so. We do not follow by sight, in other words, by human perspective, by what we think is right, but by what we know is right based on the Word of God. So we learn to trust God, and no matter what happens in our lives, we know that God is there for us. There are circumstances in life that obviously will challenge our faith, but if God is for us, then who can be against us? Romans chapter 8 and verse 31. It also means we obey Him. You cannot have faith in God and not obey Him. You know, demons believe and tremble, James chapter 2 and verse 19. So it is important that if you truly have faith in God and you are a genuine Christian, that you also obey Him. Remember the classic, Matthew chapter 7 and verse 21 pretty much says, Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. So it is important that we trust God. The question is, do you have faith in God? Are you a genuine Christian who trusts God? Are you a genuine Christian who is willing to obey God, even if sometimes what He asks you to do doesn't really make sense, or may sound ridiculous, or it's just not something that you see right? You know, God will never ask you to do something that will harm you or those around you. He will ask you to do things for your own benefit. So are you a genuine Christian who has faith in God? Secondly, a genuine Christian desires to be tested by God. Let me see if my question is there. Is it right to ask God to test us? Is it right to ask God to test us? Anyone? Who said? Absolutely. All right. Good answer. Yes, it is right. Examine me, says the psalmist. Prove me or test me. He's not saying that with an arrogant attitude. A lot of liberal commentators say, well, he's being a little arrogant here. Let's not pay attention to this. No, he's not being arrogant. Why is he asking God to examine him and to test him? Page 492, I think it was. Why is he asking God? No, or on what basis does he ask God, you know, examine me, test me? says, "Examine me, O Lord, and prove me, try my mind and my heart, for your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth." In other words, he's aware of God's grace. He knows that God's grace is there. He knows that when God does him justice, when God vindicates him, it will be on the basis of his grace. And not only that, but he also trusts that God will see the good that he has done. Notice, "And I have walked in your truth." That's why he had confidence to say, "Examine me, prove me, test me." So it is okay to ask God to test us. The question is, are we ready for him to test us? Yes, brother. Yes, exactly. That's why we ask, you know, are you ready? Am I ready for God to test me? It is important that we realize that God will test us, and sometimes, you know, we may not really like the test. We may not be comfortable with being tested, but the psalmist was. And that's why he said, you know, examine me, prove, test me. And in other words, you know, he was asking for a test from God. So how does God test us? Let me give you a couple of suggestions. By asking us to give him the first place in our lives. And number two, by allowing circumstances around us to challenge our faith. Job is a clear example. What happened to Job? He lost his children. He lost everything that he owned. And then he lost his health. And then on top of that, his wife was telling him, "Curse God and die." Of course, we're not saying, oh, you know, women, we're putting down women here. You got to put yourself in her shoes. You know, she lost her children. She lost everything that her husband owned. And not only that, but her husband got sick. You know, she did not react perhaps in the way she should have, but we need to put ourselves in her shoes. You know, it's easier for us to stand back and say, oh, and there was the wife telling him, "Curse God and die." What a bad example for women. You know, yeah, of course, the example is not good, but then again, you know, what if you were going through that? What if God was testing you or your husband or your wife and you were, well, how do I react to this? So it is important for us to understand that God tests us by asking us to give him the first place in our lives. And not only that, but by allowing circumstances around us to challenge our faith. Now the question is, what is the purpose of God testing us? What is the purpose? Strength. Okay. Yeah. What happens when you go through certain circumstances and then you have to relive those circumstances years later? You know how to deal with those. You are prepared. You have the patience and the wisdom to say, well, this is not the first time this happened to me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do what I did last time, but I'm going to try to make some changes and make things better and just pull through. You know, with the help of God, I can do it. I can manage to do all these things, and it doesn't matter. You know, I'm strong right now. You know, we all go through a lot of things that actually encourages and strengthen us. So when the time comes for us to help somebody that is going through the same circumstances, then we can say, you know what? I've been through this before. I can help you. Or I've been through this again and again, and this is how I'm going to handle it. I want to become a better person with all these things that are going on. So to strengthen us. What else? What is the purpose of God testing us? Okay, all right. To discipline us, pretty much. There's a passage in Deuteronomy, and to discipline us, Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 5, and then Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, the passage that talks about discipline, it says that nobody enjoys discipline, but when we actually reap the fruits of discipline, then we are able to appreciate the discipline that comes from the Lord and our parents. You know, my parents, they would always give me with the belt. Or in El Salvador, they would get one of those green branches. They would rip it and then give you. It was not child abuse. I didn't see it as that. Now, psychologists say, don't spank your little child or you will ruin their little personality. You know, and you don't want that. They'll grow up with all traumas and you don't want that. You know, that's not it. I am very thankful that my mother spanked me. I am very thankful that my dad spanked me. In fact, one time I tried to get my mom in trouble, and I told my dad, you know, my mother spanked me. Oh, really? Okay. And he went and grabbed the bell and smacked me again. And I was like, you didn't even give me a chance to tell you why she spanked me. You know, in my head, I was like, I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm going to get her in trouble. But then because of telling on my mom, I got in trouble again. So anyway, so it's good. And now I'm thankful. Why? Because pretty much the discipline served me to, you know, become a better man. You know, I'm not the perfect person. Nobody is perfect again. But, you know, I'm better. I could have been worse, I guess. But either way, I'm thankful for the discipline. And God does the same thing. He disciplines us through those circumstances, by those tests. Yes. Definitely. So in order to be approved, let me go back here real quick. The beginning, not sure. Well, anyway, it's not showing. But at the beginning, if you saw, there was like melting gold. Pretty much that's what God does. There's a passage in the Bible, Zechariah 13, 8 through 9, that in order for us to be approved by God, the Bible says that he will sit, you know, as that man that works with gold and melt it, refine it, so all the impurities will come out, and then the pure gold will be there. So you know that if you are a genuine Christian, those trials will help you become approved by God. You know, we need to strive to be the kind of Christian that will be approved by God, and those tests will help us. You know, it is important that we realize that sometimes we may not like the test, but then again, God is always testing us in order to make sure that we are approved, to discipline us, to give us the opportunity to show that we are faithful and to know what's in our hearts. You know, are we really doing what he requires of us? Are we really striving to be faithful? You know, our brother was mentioning during the invitation that, you know, there's the side of grace. It's all about grace. Don't get me wrong. It's all about grace. But there's one difference in standing on this side of grace, as he put it. You know, when you don't want to do what the will of God says, then, you know, his grace is still there available to you. There's still hope while there's life, there's a saying. But if you reject God's grace, what's going to happen? You're going to end up on the wrong end of the stick. You know, you're going to be punished. But if you are on this other side of grace and you are doing what God requires of you, then you can say, like the Apostle Paul, by the grace of God, I am what I am. You know, and you are being faithful, you are being loyal to your Lord. And then in the end, the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, has promised, he will give it to you. And not only to me, Paul says, but to all those who have loved his appearing. So by the grace of God, Paul was what he was. By the grace of God, we are what we are. But it's not just grace. There's nothing for you to do. And don't worry about it. God will take care of you. No, we have to do our part. God's grace was extended to Paul whenever he persecuted the church. And then Paul took advantage, became obedient to the vision that he saw. And then he started serving the Lord. And then he himself had to go through persecution. The persecutor became the one that was being persecuted later on. And all because of the grace of God. But he was a genuine Christian. I believe 2 Corinthians 11, 1 says, be imitators of me as I am of who? Christ. Paul was not focusing on imitating the great public speakers of his day. He was not focused on imitating Gamaliel, though he studied at the feet of Gamaliel. He was not focused on imitating any other person other than Jesus Christ. And it takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of being sure of what you're really doing in life or with your Christian life to say, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. We can all try, but then Paul was really nailing it with his life, with his example, to the point that he said, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. How many of us can say that? I'm sure there are a few that can say that, but being modest, they will not say it because they say, well, I don't want to come across as arrogant. I know that even though I'm here standing, just because somebody's here standing, doesn't mean they got it right or they got it together. You know, we're still working. Everybody's working. But, you know, I believe that, you know, in order to have that confidence that Paul had, I still have a little bit more work to go or to do in order for me to be able to say, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. It takes a lot of work, but it's not impossible. It's within our reach. The grace of God allows us to be that way, to be like Paul and have that confidence. So anyway, the purpose of trials, God gives us the opportunity to show that we are faithful. God gives us the opportunity to see how much we really trust him. When you are facing those circumstances in your life, whatever it is, whatever those circumstances are, do you blame God? Do you say, why me? Or do you trust him and say, well, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to get through this. And I'm going to try my best to actually do the will of God and continue pressing on. And then before you know it, the test is over. The circumstances, after the storm comes, comes the quiet, the peace and quiet after the storm. So there's a storm in your life right now. There's storms that we face, whatever it is, whether the storm of divorce, whether the storm of child abuse, whether the storm of going through cancer, whether the storm or whatever it is in your life, the storm that you're facing, do you trust God? Again, one thing that I guess I should mention, it's not God's fault that somebody got cancer, but sometimes, you know, going through those circumstances, you know, it really helps you realize whether you are trusting in God or, you know, in yourself. So those things help us. Sometimes we have the tendency to say, well, if it's God's will, it'll happen, or that happened because it was the will of God. No, sometimes things don't happen because it was the will of God. Sometimes things happen because that's just life. Let us remember that when man fell in the Garden of Eden, pretty much the world suffered the consequences of sin. So there are circumstances we face in life, and they're due to, you know, consequences of sin. It's not because God is responsible. You know, we go through those things, and it's how we react to those things that's what's important, you know, what matters in life. How do you react to those things? Question, or you're fixing your glass, fixing his glasses. Anyway, so how you react to those things is what's important. So God tests us to see how much we trust him and to let us know that he's a sovereign God. Instead of demanding for an answer, why, God, let us understand that he's the creator. We are here because of his grace, because he has given us a second chance, and we have the opportunity to make things right with him, to be reconciled, to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, and continue in life doing the best we can so in the future we can be with him. But if we get the attitude of, why, God, I need an answer right now during those trials, what happens? Is he going to answer you? Well, let me explain to you, you know. Or he might end up saying to us like Job, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? You know, all these things that I've done, here you are questioning me? God is a sovereign God. He's not the type of God that is, a God that is pretty much a mean type of God, if we can put it in simple terms. He's a God that is a sovereign God, knows his place, knows he's the ruler of the world, and he wants us to know that and to accept the fact that he rules over all creation, and that we do not have the right to question him. Job tried to do it, and what happens? He pretty much realized and learned that, well, yep, you're right. Who am I to question you? So it is important that we realize that the purpose of God testing us is to help us realize that he's a sovereign God. And here are the rest of the reasons, I guess. Whoop. Anyway, pushed the wrong button, I think. Either way. Next reason, a genuine Christian walks in the truth and separates himself from the enemies of God. Question, what does it mean to walk in the truth? What does it mean to walk in the truth? Obey God. Obey God? All right. What else? Follow his will, obey God. Synonyms. It means also that we do not hang out with the wrong crowd. That's what it means to walk in the truth. Let us remember that a genuine Christian also separates himself from the enemies of God, as Psalm 26, verses 3 to 5 and 9 through 11 says. The psalmist was able to say, to say to God, examine me, test me, you know, prove me, prove my heart, prove my mind, because he knew he was not hanging out with the wrong crowd. Sometimes as Christians, we need to learn that we will be associating with non-converts, whether at work, at the store, or any other place, our neighbors. But, you know, that doesn't mean we have to go with them and pretty much do or engage in activities that they engage with. There was a certain preacher, he's gone way to the left, obviously, but he gave an example once trying to explain the statement that Paul made. To the Jew, I made myself a Jew. To the Greek, I made myself a Greek. To the slave, I became a slave, etc. And he gave the illustration that one time he went door knocking and knocked the door. A young lady with a baby, no pampers, and a cigarette answered the door. And as soon as she looked at him, she closed the door, slammed it on his face. So he said he went, bought some pampers, bought some cigarettes, went back to the door, and it's like, didn't I just close the door on you? And he's like, yes, but I brought this for you. Okay, and she's like, okay, come in. So he went in there. Here are the pampers for the baby. She put one on, and then there was the case of cigarettes or box of cigarettes, whatever it was, the little packet. Anyway, the little packet, gave it to her. She pulled one out. Then she put it on the table. Then he went, picked one up, lit it up, started smoking. It's like, okay, now you know why he's all the way to the left. Anyway, so he says, was I doing wrong? He questioned the church. And he says, well, all I did was doing what Paul said. You know, to the Jew, I became Jew. To the Greek, I became Greek. To the slave, slave. And to this lady, you know, she was a smoker, so I became a smoker to have the opportunity to present the Word of God to her.
She forgot it's always right to do
right. Yes. And it's always wrong to do wrong, no matter what you want to do. So that's not what Paul meant, was it? So that's why we need to be careful. Yes, we need to try to sympathize with people. Yes, we need to try to mingle with them in the sense that, you know, you cannot, season the meat if you don't put salt in it, if the salt doesn't make contact with the meat. And that means you're going to come in contact with all kinds of people in the world, but that doesn't mean you're going to engage in their activities. It just means you approach them and you talk to them. You know, you cannot present the gospel to someone if you don't talk to them. So that's what it means. So he approached the Jews just in the same way we would approach a homosexual today. Well, oh, he's homosexual. I'm not going to approach him. Well, you need to talk to him. And you present the gospel to that person, and doesn't mean you become homosexual. No, it just means you have contact with that person in order for you to present the gospel to that person. And that's what Paul meant. It's not you do what they do. And you know, again, is it no wonder why this preacher has gone all the way to the left field and being liberal? But either way, we do not associate with the people. Yes, we talk to them. Yes, we try to present the gospel to them. But no, we do not engage in their activities. Why? Because it's always wrong to do wrong. You know, we need to remember that. So, what kind of Christian are you? Are you doing what God requires of you? Or, let me get the right button here. Are you like the lyrics of this song by Tim Nichols and Jeffrey Steele? James Otto sings it pretty much. The chorus of the song says, fly high like the angels, run wild like the devil. We're all trying to find the middle between saint and sinner, wrong and right, Sunday morning and Saturday night. In other words, are you a Saturday night devil and a Sunday morning saint? Is that the attitude you want to have? Is that the attitude of a genuine Christian? That's not the attitude of a genuine Christian. A Christian that is sincere, genuine, does not live his or her life like that. He tries to stick with the truth, walk in truth, or he just says, well, this is not for me. And then who's going to suffer the consequence? He will suffer the consequences. Let us remember, according to the principle found in Titus chapter 3 and verse 10, God doesn't send you to hell or doesn't send someone to hell because he just wants to. A man does that. God only serves justice. And if you decide that you want to do what's right to make it to heaven, then God will put you in heaven. If you decide to do what's wrong, cause division and do all these kinds of things that are contrary to the will of God, then who's sending himself or herself to hell? God serves justice, but you did that to yourself. Remember that. So a Christian that is genuine does not live his life like pretty much the song says. You know, try to find some middle ground. With Christ, you are either Christian or you are not. Matthew 6:24, you cannot serve two masters. And if you are friends with the world, you become an enemy of God. Next, a Christian that is genuine shares God's word with others. Question, how do we share God with others? Brief suggestion, by telling others how thankful we are for what God has done in our lives. The Apostle Paul is a great example. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 12 through 16. He pretty much says that he is thankful because the grace of God was bestowed upon him. Though he was formerly a blasphemer and a persecutor, he was shown grace by God. And he's used as an example to all those who will believe in the future. In other words, Paul persecuted the church, killed Christians, pretty much made them blaspheme the name of God, and did all these horrible things against the church, but God was willing to forgive him. Don't say, well, I've done so many things, I don't think God will forgive me. That's just an excuse that the devil puts in your heart so you can say, well, I really don't want to follow Christ. You know, you can follow Christ, and he's able to forgive you. There's nothing impossible for Christ. If you're willing to follow him, he will forgive you like he did Paul. Also, by proclaiming the gospel plan of salvation with others. Let us remember we have a responsibility. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. We need to make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything that the Lord has commanded us, and he will be with us always until the end of the earth or the age. So in other words, we need to share God with others. And not only that, but, you know, the question is, are you sharing God or are you keeping it to yourself? Well, I'm a Christian. I know about God. I know about the gospel. I know the five-finger point, but are we, not the five-finger death punch, but the like the movies, but the five-finger point for the plan of salvation. If you know it, then are you sharing it with others? That's the important thing. If you know the Bible from cover to cover, again, but you don't put it into practice and you don't share it with others, what good will it do? It's not making you a genuine Christian. We need to practice what the Word of God says. Be doers of the Word and not hearers only. Here's a quote. I'm not sure if it's original with him, but one of our former instructors who already passed on to his reward, Brother Ava Malone, said, every man has a right to hear the gospel once, than any man has to hear it twice. So we need to try to share the gospel at least once with a person. And if they had the opportunity to hear it and they don't obey it, they choose to ignore the call through the gospel, then that's their responsibility, not ours. You know, it falls on them. But if we know the gospel plan of salvation, but we don't share it, then, you know, what good will it do? We need to make sure we are genuine Christians to the point that we share Christ with others. Next, a genuine Christian loves to worship God. Psalm 26, verse 6, 8, and 12. And because he loves to worship God, the genuine Christian prepares himself to worship God. He does this by the expression that the psalmist used, washing his hands with innocence. That means he has a pure heart and he has done whatever it takes in order for him to be right with God and right with his fellow Christians. Do we get that? Done whatever it takes to be right with God and with his fellow Christians. Brother Trujillo, I just don't like him, but I'm here to worship God, right? It doesn't matter. I don't care about him. What matters is that I'm here to worship God. I'm not here because of him. Did you notice that sometimes that's the advice we give? Well, if you don't really get along with him, you know, or ex-brother or sister, you know, just go there. You're going for God. There are times where Brother Trujillo or Brother X or Brother me, you know, sometimes we may be difficult people. But in that sense, I guess we come to church, we try to mingle, you know, we don't see each other as enemies. We try to make things work, and we are here because of God. But when we have the mindset of, well, I just cannot stand him, but I'm just here because of God, are we really pleasing God? No. What does Matthew chapter 5, verse 23 and 24 says, if somebody can read it real quick, Matthew 5, 23 through 24.
And you'll be thrown into prison.
All right. So if your brother has something against you, It doesn't say if I have something against my brother. It says if he has something against me and I know it, who's going to go? Ah, no, Brother Summerlin needs to come to me because he's the one that offended me, right? That's the attitude that we get. Sometimes that's the advice we give. Well, you know, if he did it to you, then he needs to come. And he needs to be humble and learn that, he makes mistakes and he needs to apologize. No, if your brother has something against you and I know it, then I am to leave my offering. In other words, I need to make things right with him and then worship God. That's the attitude that I need to have in order to be a genuine, mature Christian. Next, because he loves to worship God, the genuine Christians avoids missing worship service. That's another one, right? We love Sunday morning, right? Why? Everybody dresses up, tries to look their best, and the benches, seats, whatever you want to call them, they're full, right? How many can we count in attendance on Sunday morning? 400, 500? Not that many? Well, let's suppose it's 400. Then what happens Sunday evening? It's sliced in half, right? Or less than half. What happens on Wednesday night? Where's the rest? We're waiting for Sunday.
No, half of Sunday.
Oh, okay. Half Sunday night, half of half Wednesday night. And if you think about it, perhaps it's not the mandatory rule, but how many days a week did the first century church meet? How many days per week? Every day, right? In the temple, they worshiped God, they gained favor with the people, and God kept adding those who were being saved to the church. They met every day. I know times have changed. Sometimes work schedules are difficult. Sometimes there are people who are sick. We have the shut-ins. You know, we cannot say, well, you're going to hell because you're not coming. No, it's a shut-in. You know, give him a break. You know, there are ways that we can take the Word of God to those brothers and sisters. But, you know, it's not like a set norm. But when the church meets and worships, where should the genuine Christian be? Worshiping God. There's not an option. We need to make sure we worship God. Missing worship service sometimes can become something that, you know, we just find it so easy to do. My head hurts. I'm sorry. I'm going to call the elders or shoot them an email. I won't be able to make it today. The next morning, you get up about what time to go to work? Let's say 6 in the morning. That same headache, perhaps with less or more intensity, is still present. And what do? You go to work. If you can do that for your job, why not for the church? Well, not necessarily the church. For God, the Creator, the one that has given you salvation. It's easy for us to say, well, this headache keeps me from going to church, but, oh, man, I got to pay bills, right? Is that the attitude of a genuine Christian? No. Yeah, they fire you and they don't want to pay you, especially here in Florida. What do? Can't do nothing. They just fire you. That's it. You lost your job because you didn't do what you were supposed to, even if it's not true. And then what happens? You don't get paid. God is not like, well, he's not being faithful. Let's cut his air supply, right? He doesn't do that. He always gives you everything. He gives you everything and then one simple headache. Excuse me, Lord, I just cannot make it today, right? That's the attitude that a lot of Christians have. That doesn't mean they're not genuine Christians. They're trying, but sometimes we let our guards down and we let little things, you know, interfere with our worship to God. Yeah, exactly. Are we approved or are we not? And I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of Jehovah. Ah, it's Wednesday. I have to go to church, right? Shouldn't be the attitude that we need to have. We need to make sure we do what's right, and doing what's right means we worship God and we don't miss worship services. Next one, because he loves to worship God, the genuine Christian worships with assurance. That is, he blesses God by worshiping him the right way, and he knows he's worshiping God the right way. The mentality of the denominations around the world is, well, just worship God whatever way you want. You know, it doesn't matter. As long as you worship him with the heart, that's what's important. Is that the case? No. Nope. God has given us a pattern in the New Testament. It is our responsibility to follow that pattern. And if we don't do so, then, well, as long as you do it from the heart, it won't count before God. Good intentions don't count without God, with God. Yes. Yep. One of the really downfalls of working as a house parent in Nebraska is that you had to take children to the church of their choice. There was five churches that we would visit on Sunday. We didn't have a say on that because we were assistant house parents. We did not have our own cottage at first, the cottage they call it. But the regular or permanent house parents, they had already made their choice. But there was a new set of house parents there that were permanent, and they were looking for a church. And one of the observations a Catholic kid made, he used to like rock and roll and everything, and he had been to rock and roll concerts at his young age, and he said, you know, I don't like this church that we visited today. He said, oh, really? Why? Because I don't think that's the way you worship God. He's Catholic, liked rock and roll, and he knew there was something that was not right. He said, because it seemed like a concert. You know, everybody was like waving their hands. All they needed was a lighter. And the guy running around in circles, like dancing like David, supposedly. And he said, it just doesn't seem right. It felt like a concert. And I've been to concerts, and that's pretty much the same thing going on. And I don't like that. So, okay, well, we'll find another church that suits you. And that's pretty much the answer. But if the other kids voted, we like this church, then it was all those votes against that kid. And so he had to go there. So that's pretty much the concept of denominationalism. Worship God however you want. Make yourself feel good. And it was pretty much a concert. There was the band there playing "Oh, How I Love You, God" with guitar, percussion, drums, and all those instruments. And nobody was, well, those that were in the auditorium, they were just like this. Or like this. Who was doing the singing? The band. So it was pretty much like being in a concert. So anyway, those are the traits of a genuine Christian. The question is, what kind of Christian are you? Genuine or fake? You and God know the answer, and I hope this lesson helps you to work on your Christian life in order for you to become the strong, mature, genuine Christian that you should be. God bless you.